Okay, welcome to the Bosch. Today's shiur on the halachas of Beis HaNarkos is going to be presented by Rabbi Yonah Reis, who was the head of the Beis Din for the RCA for many, many years in Manhattan, and now is the head of the Beis Din of the CRC in Chicago, and Chavad Rav, Rabbi Reis.
Very much. At the beginning of Parshas Mishpatim, as Pasuk, that says, Ve'ilam Mishpatim Asher Tzasim Lefneihem. These are the laws and ordinances that you shall place in front of them. The word them is understood by the Gemara as talking about the Dayanim, who are described in the Parsha, Ad HaElokim Yavo Devar Shneihem. It's referring to bringing disputes in front of Jewish law judges who are acting as Dayanim. And the Gemara in Gittin on Daf Pei Ches Amud Beis Darshins Lifneihem Lo Lifnei Arkos, that you're supposed to bring cases in front of Jewish law judges and not in front of the civil courts. So this appears to be a prohibition in the Torah, which is articulated as a mitzvah essay. And in fact, the Tashbetz in Chelik Beis Simen Reish Tzadi says explicitly that this is an Isser essay. This is a prohibition which is derived through a positive commandment that one is obligated only to litigate in front of a Jewish court that's operating according to principles of Jewish law and not in front of a secular court. There's a separate pasuk in Parsha Shoftim that says Shoftim Shaltim Titen Lecha B'chol She'arecha, that there is an obligation for the community to establish a Jewish law court so that there be a Jewish bate that will be able to serve the needs of the community, and if part litigate, they will be able to litigate the case in front of a Beis Din. So there's certainly a prohibition to go in front of a civil court. Is there a positive commandment that one should actually bring cases in front of a Beis Din? So one is, strictly speaking, not obligated to ever litigate in their life. You don't have an obligation to get into a fight and a dispute and to end up having to bring the case in Beis Din. If you're able to get along with everybody your entire life and never bring a case to Beis Din, you haven't violated any commandments. But if you do litigate, then it's a prohibition to litigate in front of a secular court. There are some authorities, really a minority, who say, well, we don't find that this is listed in the Minyan HaMitzvos anywhere. So some explain why it's not listed in the Minyan HaMitzvos, but there are some who want to say maybe it's only an Issa D'Rabbanan in the Kruz in a Smachta B'Alma, that it's not a real scriptural, not a real Daraisa prohibition, it's only a D'Rabbanan prohibition. But the Pashtus is that most would agree with the Tashbetz that it is in fact a Torah prohibition to litigate in front of the civil courts. Why is it, what's the nature of this prohibition? So Rashi says on the Pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim that if one litigates in front of the civil courts, the Mechalel es Hashem, it causes a Chilul Hashem. That certainly is a negative prohibition. Miyakev Hashem Alilam Lehashpicham. And one is giving value to the idolatrous religion that is behind the court in question, to endow upon the idolatrous religion unnecessary praise. The Rambam, when the Rambam describes this prohibition in Hilchos Sanhedrin, Perek Chofa Palacha Zayin, the Rambam says that the person is kiilu cheref. The person is like they are blaspheming behavim yad b'toras Moshe Rabbeinu, because they're going against the Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu handed down the Torah from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and here instead of recognizing the Torah by litigating the case in front of a duly constituted Beis Din, the litigants, the Jewish litigants, are saying that's not good enough for them. They have to submit themselves to the court of an idolatrous religion or the court of some other authority other than the Torah. So according to the reason that's given by the Rambam, that it's Kehavim Yad B'Toras Moshe Rabbeinu, it would seem that even if there's no Shem Elilim involved, even if there wouldn't be some idolatrous religion, like some of the poskim discuss, the Tashbetz discusses this, for example, what if you have a court which is not set up by an idolatrous religion, it's set up by the Muslims. The Muslim religion, we generally assume, is not an idolatry. They believe in one God. So that's not Miyakeh Shem Elilim per se. So is that also included in the prohibition? So he says, yes, of course, it's all included in the prohibition. We can understand this very well according to the reasoning of the of the Rambam that is kehavim yad b'toras Moshe Rabbeinu, that even if one is not strengthening the name of a different religion, one is still in some fashion insulting the Torah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us through Moshe Rabbeinu by not utilizing the Beis Din system, but by utilizing a different system of courts which operate under a different legal system. So we'll see that sometimes one reason or the other is operative with respect to the various prohibitions and corollary prohibitions that relate to the Yisr HaKos. Sometimes one is being Miyakir Shem Elilim, and sometimes one is being Meirim Yad B'Toras Moshe Rabbeinu. So Rashi, for example, writes that Afilu Im Dinam Kedinenu, even if their law is exactly like our law, even if they decide the case exactly as Torah law would have decided it, so it doesn't really matter that the Torah's Moshe Rabbeinu would have said the same thing. One is still strengthening a different legal system. One is still being Mechalel as Hashem by giving credence to a different legal system. So that's also problematic. The Shulchan Aruch in Choshen Mishpat Siman Samaches also says, let's say that one goes to a civil court not to decide the case according to strict secular law, but they go to the civil court system and they say you can arbitrate the case according to whatever you think is just and fair. So they're not strictly utilizing the civil law system, but you're still going to the civil law courts. Like this comes up sometimes with small claims courts. I remember somebody once took the Beis Din to a small claims court in the Bronx. They didn't like the decision that we rendered. It was too expensive for them to appeal the decision, so they figured they would just take the Beis Din to small claims court in the Bronx and say that they wanted their money back because they paid to have the case adjudicated. They had to pay an administrative fee to the Beis Din to have the case adjudicated in the Beis Din, and they didn't like the outcome. They didn't think the Beis Din decided the case correctly, so they wanted their money back, so that wasn't so much money. They get small claims court. If it's only a few $1,000, whatever it is, you could still bring it to small claims court. And when we came to the small claims court, the person said, okay, we're in small claims court. We don't have to decide according to strict law. We could just decide according to a pshara. We could just make some sort of a compromise. We'll decide according to whatever are the general principles of fairness that occur to the arbitrator in question. They weren't deciding according to strict civil law. So is that also prohibited? So that would be prohibited. The only reason we were able to appear is because we were summoned. We wouldn't have been able to bring someone else to small claims court. They brought us to small claims court. So less braver. So I had to go there. So I remember the judge saying, okay, whatever it was, the person wanted $500. So the judge said, okay, so why don't we just split it 50-50? We'll go away, so you'll give them $250. I said, no, because that's a zilzul bezin. I don't think I used those words. But I said, and that would be an insult to the institution of the rabbinical court. The person submitted himself to our authority. They have to accept the decision. We decided the case fair and square. And therefore, I have no choice but to insist upon the full judgment that the person should be entitled to nothing. So I don't think the arbitrator was so happy, because that meant that he had to actually think about the case and decide it. So I was walking out with the other party. So the other party turned to me and said, I'm just going to explain my strategy to you. My strategy is that I figure that if I can win in the small claims court and show that I can get my money back, so then that will empower me to bring a case in regular civil court against the Beis Din to overturn the decision, because I'll be able to bring as evidence that the small claims arbitrator decided that I should get my money back. So I thought, okay, very nice. And a couple of days later, the decision came forth that the person got absolutely nothing. Okay, good. All's well that ends well. But if strictly speaking, even bringing one Jew, bringing another Jewish party to small claims court, even if they're going to decide the case according to whatever is right and just in the eyes of the arbitrator, and they're not using civil law principles, but the Shulchan Aruch and Siman Samaches is a pshara in front of our cause. If you have a pshara, but in front, it's part of the law, it's part of the legal system. You have to go to the court system. I had to go to the courts. I parked my car behind the tree, and near the tree, blocked by the tree, was a no parking sign. So when I came out of the small claims court, to add insult to injury, so my car had been towed. So then I had to litigate that case too. So that I had to sort of take pictures and show that the sign was not visible. So they refunded all of my towing costs and everything. I won that case too. So I guess it was a good day, all in all. But in any event, that would be miyakir. That would be considered to be miyakir shem alilim if you're just appearing in front of their court system, even for those purposes alone. So the Ramban says something interesting here. The Ramban says, and the pasuk in Mishpatim says, that even though generally speaking, we have a principle that called Tanai Sheba Mamon Kayim, that two Jews can make any condition that they want with respect to monetary matters. That they can decide, like, for example, a Shomer Chinam, who is Pata Migneva Ba'aveda, can stipulate that he's going to be Chayav Migneva Ba'aveda. A Shomer Sachar, who is Chayav Migneva Ba'aveda, can stipulate that he's going to be Pata Migneva Ba'aveda. You can make any kind of stipulation you want with respect to monetary matters. It's a Mishnah and a Gemara and Baba Metzia. Then when we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Meir disagrees as a general matter, but we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda that you can make any kind of stipulation. So let's say you have two parties who stipulate that even though according to the Torah they're not supposed to go to secular court, but they have a monetary dispute, so this is also a monetary matter. So they're going to stipulate between the two of them that they're going to go to secular court. So the Ramban says that they're not allowed to do that. Even though the Torah derives, the Gemara in Gittin derives two prohibitions from the Pasuk. The Gemara derives lipnei hem below lifnei arkos, that you have to go in front of Jewish law judges and not in front of secular court judges. And number two, lifnei hem below lifnei hedyotos, you have to go in front of trained and certified dayanim and not in front of hedyotos, in front of people who are not trained and certified the dayanim. So when it comes to the second limud, the second rule, you're not supposed to appear in front of hedyotos there. If two Jewish parties stipulate, well, we're going to agree that we'll accept upon ourselves hedyotos to adjudicate the case, that they are allowed to do. That's not considered to be a prohibition. That's just considered to be a regular monetary stipulation. But if they both agree that they're going to go in front of secular court judges, since they are miyakeshem alilem, the machalas Hashem, the meirim yad keneged Toras Moshe Rabbeinu, the keilu cheret, they're doing all of these terrible things that are a ritual prohibition, so you're not allowed to make a tanai b'davish. You can't make a condition with respect to a ritual prohibition. Just like two Jews who enter into a contract can't make a condition between the two of them that we agree between the two of us that we're going to operate our business on Shabbos. That's null and void. Because that's a tanai masna mashakosta b'tor b'dava shebe iser. That you're not allowed to do. You can't make a stipulation. We agree between the two of us that we're going to eat pork tonight. It doesn't work because you're not the bialim. You don't have ownership over that particular matter. You have ownership with respect to monetary matters. You can give away things, or we can say that a monetary obligation only arises meritzona shel hasheni, as the Ramban says in Baba Basra. It only comes into effect if both parties agree upon it, if the one who has the right insists upon exercising that right. But otherwise, on a monetary matter, you can make a condition. But this is not considered to be a monetary matter. This is considered to be a ritual prohibition. So there's a little bit of a discussion between the Sma and the Taz about this issue, because there's a tshuva harash, which is also in the materials here, in Klal Shishim Mishmona, Samaches of the tshuva harash, where the tshuva harash discusses a case where people enter into a contract, and the contract says explicitly that this will operate Bein Medine Yisrael, Bein Medine Yakum. They have a choice of venue clause, a choice of jurisdiction that says this case can be adjudicated if there's ever a dispute, either in a Jewish court or in a non-Jewish court. So he says, how do you interpret the clause? So the Rosh says that it can't be that the people are Rishayim. They would go against the Torah prohibition of litigating in front of a secular court. What it must mean is that if it's a type of case where one of the parties is going to be summoned to a Beis Din, and they're going to refuse to show up in front of Beis Din, then the other party will be allowed to bring them to secular court. As we'll see, that is permitted according to the halacha. If the defendant refuses to go to Beis Din, so then the Beis Din gives permission for the plaintiff to bring the case to secular court. So it must be, says the Rosh, that's what they mean. So the Sma says, so from the Rosh is the implication that when the contract is very clear that the parties genuinely mean, where it's not just a question of interpreting what they really mean, but where the contract is very explicit that they both agree that they will go to secular court. So then it means that if there's some sort of a right that a party would have, a claim that a party would be able to assert only in secular court, that a Beis Din would not recognize, then they're saying that since they want to be able to collect this claim, therefore the contract stipulates if there's a dispute, the case will only be brought in secular court, then it should be enforceable. So the Taz says, how could such a thing be? It's against the simple understanding of the halacha. It's against the simple understanding of what's said explicitly in Siman Chavav in the Shulchan Aruch Hoshim Mishpat as well, where the Shulchan Aruch says that even if the party stipulates to go to secular court, the condition is null and void. So Sma says, no, that's only if Beis Din could have adjudicated the claim as well. Here is a type of claim that only a secular court would grant, and in such a case, if it's quite clear that that was the intention of the party, so then the stipulation would be binding. So the Taz says, Otaber Shiyaskin, and the Taz says, it can't be. How can you enforce a clause based on somebody wanting to do something which is clearly wicked, which is clearly a transgression? We could never be able to enforce something like that. So it's generally assumed, with respect to that machlokus, it's generally assumed like the Taz, that like the Ramban says, that this would be considered to be a masna mashkasa b'torah b'davar shebe'i iser, and therefore that would not be an enforceable condition. However, the Sma and the Taz seem to argue about something else as well, which is, what if there's a contractual clause, and in the contractual clause, the parties stipulate we're going to go to Beis Din. We agree there's a halakha on the books that we're supposed to go to Beis Din, but we want Beis Din to decide the case according to secular law. So is that considered to be binding? They're going to go to Beis Din, but they're just empowering the Beis Din, they're directing the Beis Din to decide the case according to secular law. So Rabbi Bleicher has an essay in his Benesivas HaHalakha where he says, well, there are two different aspects of the Yisra HaKos. One aspect is the choice of forum, of the prohibition against the choosing to adjudicate the case in front of a secular court. The other aspect is this other part of being meirim yad b'toras Moshe Rabbeinu, of going against Jewish law and deciding the case according to secular law. So if the parties explicitly authorize the Beis Din to decide the case against according to secular law, maybe that's also considered to be an Isser HaKos. So he thinks that would also be considered to be an Isser HaKos. So that's a big question as to whether that's considered to be an Isser HaKos or not. So the Sma says that parties can certainly stipulate that they want the Beis Din to decide the case according to the principles of civil law that are generally practiced. And the Taz seems to say that parties can't stipulate that the Beis Din is going to decide the case against Torah. Now the Taz in Siman Samach Aleph seems to clarify that what he really means is only if they explicitly contract that they're going to do something that is mamish prohibited according to the Torah as a ritual matter. Like, for example, where they stipulate the amenash lo tishmeteni shvius. We just had the Shemitah year, so at the end of the Shemitah year, all loans are canceled. So if parties stipulate the Shemitah year won't cancel my loan, that's considered to be null and void. If they stipulate amenash lo tishmeteni bishvius, that you personally will still pay back the loan, even though it's canceled by the end of the Shemitah year, but of course we accept the reality that the loan is canceled after the Shemitah year, so that's considered to be a binding condition. That's what the Gemara at the beginning of Maseches Mako says. But if the party stipulates, the lender stipulates with the borrower, I'm making you a loan, amenash lo tishmeteni shviyas, on condition that the Shemitah year won't cancel the loan. It's not true. The Shemitah year will cancel the loan. So that's considered not to be binding. So the Taz says, that's what I'm talking about, that if they made such a condition and they stipulate, well, even though a Beis Din is not going to enforce the loan contract because the Shemitah year will cancel the loan at the end of the Shemitah year, and nonetheless there's a reservation of the right to pursue the claim in secular court because the secular court will enforce collection of the loan, so that's not enforceable. But if it's not in the realm of, say, Shemitah's Ksafim, something which is an absolute prohibition according to Torah law, but it's just a monetary condition that they say that we have the right, just like a Shomer Chinam can agree to be Chai if a Gnei Raveda Shomer Socher can stipulate with the owner of the deposit that he's going to be Pater from a Gneva Veda, so too the parties can accept upon themselves various laws that are generally utilized and practiced in society in accordance with principles of secular law. So this is a big question, to what degree we would say that there's a genuine machlokas here between the Sma and the Taz, and we would paskin here as well, like the Taz, to say that parties would not even be able to stipulate that the Beis Din shall decide in accordance with secular law, Or to what degree we would say that maybe even the Taz agrees that generally speaking you would be allowed to make such a condition. So the Minchas Yitzvak has the tshuva in which he says that the Sman and the Taz don't really argue about this, that of course if all that's agreed upon is that they're going to follow principles of secular law, but they're going to adjudicate in front of the Bezdin. The Bezdin will make sure that there's no prohibition of ritual law that takes place. There's no collection of prohibited interest. There's no collection of a loan that was canceled at the end of the Shemitah year, and so forth and so forth. So that would be a perfectly valid condition. This is a big machlokus even among contemporary poskim. A lot of it hinges upon how one understands a certain shuvas harashba. There's a harashba in Chelik Vav Simen Reish Nundalit that seems to deal with this issue a little bit. The Rashba is not quoted for this proposition in Shulchan Aruch. There are two parts of the Rashba. The Rashba is dealing with a case where parties lived in a community where there was a minhag in the community. There was a secular minhag. It didn't come from the Jewish community. It came from the secular community. Even though certain Jewish communities also had such a minhag, it even had such a takana, but in this community it came from the secular community, that if a woman married a man and she died within the first year or two of marriage and didn't have any children, then instead of the wife's inheritance going to the husband, the nedunya, the dowry that was supplied to the wife from her father, would go back to the father. So according to Jewish law, a husband inherits his wife and he should inherit it. But the questioner who approached the Rashba said, since in our community this is the generally accepted norm, this is the generally accepted secular custom, so should the Jewish community follow the same custom in adjudicating this case, when the wife unfortunately died without any children, that the dowry should go back to her father and not go to her husband? So the Rashba says, hey, if you look in, the Rashba seems to be all over the map. The Rashba starts off by saying, if you look in the Yerushalmi, you'll see that there was such a condition that was made even in Jewish communities. And of course, if they made such a condition, it would be binding. And if this was the accepted norm in the Jewish community, even if they didn't make such a condition, it would be binding. But then the Rashba makes a very strong statement. He says, when we call Malkum, Lino Kane. Nonetheless, if you're going to practice this Mipneshu Mishpa Goyim, if you're going to do it only, not because this is what the parties wanted, or because this was the custom in the Jewish community, but because this is what the secular law stipulates, Bamas nearly Sha'asa, then it would be prohibited. The Fishu Mechake Esa Goyim, because then you are imitating, you're mimicking the non-Jews, so the non-Jewish legal system. Vizel Shisiva Torah, and that's what the Torah prohibited, Lipneim Lo Lipnei Goyim. The Torah says you have to go in front of the Jewish courts, and you're not allowed to go in front of the secular courts. Despite the fact that it's a monetary matter, and despite the fact that both parties are amenable to go in front of the secular court. And then the Rashba takes a sharp turn at one point in the tshuva, and he says, and don't make the argument that it should be permissible mishum dina de machusa, because we have a principle that dina de machusa dina, that the law of the land is the law. And he goes on to say, because the law of the land does not mean that when it comes to all monetary matters you're going to follow the law of the land. It's only with respect to certain very circumscribed matters relating to taxes, real estate, or whatever, that we follow dina de machusa dina. It's a separate discussion, but not with respect to something like this. And if you're going to follow dina de malchus adina with respect to all monetary matters, bechlal okir kol dina yatovar ashlema, you're going to uproot all of the laws of our Torah. Umalan l'sifrei hakodesh mekudashim shechibu lanu Rebbe Rachva Rabina Ravashi, and what are we going to do with all of our batei midrashos? They'll become meaningless. Yom midus b'neim dina agayim, just send everybody to law school. V'yivnu lahem bamos teluos, and everybody will just build worthless altars. V'veis midrasei agayim chalilo tiyakazos b'yisrael. We have to wear ashes and sackcloth if such a thing would ever be countenanced. And then he goes back, and then he goes to the very end of the tshuva. He goes back and he says, but of course that a person with davar shebemamon, if we're dealing with a monetary matter, a person can decide to give whatever they want, not according to halacha, just like a shomachinam can agree to be like a shoel, and so forth and so forth. So the Rashba seems to be all over the map. So a lot of interpreting the Rashba depends upon which clause or which section of the tshuva one seizes upon. So those who feel very strongly that even if parties agree to go in front of a Beis Din, they can't stipulate to follow secular law, so they focus on the middle part of the Rashba, where the Rashba says that you can't imitate the Goyim, and the Torah is going to gird itself with ashes and sackcloth and so forth and so forth. And those who think that it should be permissible focus on the first part, the first few lines of the Rashba. They say, well, if the parties explicitly stipulated that they want to follow secular law, then they could. So how does one reconcile all of the seemingly contradictory statements in the Rashba? The Rashba is only cited in the Shulchan Aruch and Siman Shin Samech Tes and Choshe Mishpa for the proposition that we don't apply Dina de Malchus Adina across the map. That's the way in which the Rashba is actually brought along. So it could be that even if the Rashba held that one is not allowed to stipulate, the two parties on their own can't stipulate to follow secular in front of the Beis Din, maybe we don't hold like that Rashba. Additionally, the Beis Yosef in Siman Chavav quotes the Rashba as saying that the problem the Rashba was dealing with was not agreeing to accept secular law, but the Rashba was talking about agreeing to go in front of secular law judges. It doesn't sound that way from the Lashon of the Rashba, but that's the way the Beis Yosef seems to understand the Rashba. I thought that the simple reading of the Rashba is the Rashba was saying that two parties, if they decide because they want to follow the customary norms of society and therefore accept upon themselves that the general standards of secular law and ask the Beis Din to follow that expectation, that's a regular Tanai Shem B'Mamon, and that's something which would be permissible. When is it not permissible? When they're mechakes a goyim, when the parties are not doing it because they've researched the law and they determine that the monetary customs in question are consistent with their expectations, but they just want to hook, line, and sinker follow secular law. They have no idea what secular law says. They just feel secular law is superior to Jewish law, therefore they just want to follow secular law. So that's what the Rashba was saying was prohibited. So that I thought was the simple understanding of the Rashba. Others distinguish, I think, Ezra Batsri has a potential distinction in his Sfarim. Rav Ezra Batsri is a very noted Dayan in Eretz Yisrael. He wrote a compendium of laws about monetary halacha called Dinei Mamonos, and then he wrote more recently a compendium of laws about matrimonial halacha called Dinei Ishus. They were all very superb volumes, very worthwhile reading. So Rav Batsri seems to say the distinction is that the questioner in this case was proposing that the entire community just throw out Torah law when it came to matters of Yerusha and accept secular law. So that's not something which is proper. But if you have two individuals who in a particular case decide that they're going to accept upon themselves in their individual transaction the norms of secular law because they want to make a Tanai B'davar Shem B'Mamon, so that in a private transaction would be okay as long as it's not a community-wide takana. So that seems to be more along the lines of what the Chazon Ish complained about. The Chazon Ish, when the state of Israel, the Medina Yisrael, was founded, so it was founded in such a way in which the legal system that was adopted was not a Torah legal system. They didn't say, okay, we're going to follow Choshen Mishpat. They should have said, we're going to follow Choshen Mishpat. That's the way it should be in Eretz Yisrael. For some reason, they decided to follow a different civil law system based on a combination of, I don't know, Ottoman law and British law, ancient Roman law, I don't know, combination of different legal systems that they put together. And they said, and an argument was made that this did not constitute an Issur HaKos because it's not going to be Jewish law judges that will be adjudicating everything, but they'll be adjudicating everything according to some secular law system that they cobbled together as opposed to Torah. So they wanted to argue that this was okay. And in fact, there were notable personalities who wanted to argue that this was okay, including Menachem Elon, who was served as prominent person who served on the Israeli Supreme Court as a judge for a long time. And he also was the founder, I think, of the Mishpat Ivri movement, where he wrote volumes and volumes explaining how Jewish law should be relevant to contemporary times. The problem is he sat in a court that wasn't officially bound by Jewish law. So what he would do is he would write decisions, adjoining decisions, that were based on whatever statutes were in place in the state of Israel. And then he would add like 20-page addendums afterwards showing what Jewish law would have to say on the subject. And then he would show how the same result would be obtained according to Jewish law. How could it be? The Jewish law would always be exactly the same as secular law, because he always had a few tricks to get to the same finish line. He would throw in, and we know that you always follow the Minhag HaSofim, you always follow the law of the merchants, the law of the custom of the Minhag HaMedina, the custom of the land, and based on the secular law, this has become the custom of the land, so therefore everything is always exactly the same. We would have these learned discussions and discourses. His heart was in the right place. But the Chazon Ish said that it doesn't really work. If the judges are essentially bound by the secular law, so the Chazon Ish says that this is really a violation. It's a wholesale violation. The Chazon Ish, interestingly, didn't describe this as a lifneim v'lo lifnei akum violation. He described it as a lifneim lo lifnei hadyotas violation, but of a degree and of a manner which would still be beyond the pale of what one would be allowed to make a condition about. So the words of the Chazon Ish is as follows. He says that even though afagat leikim b'neim dayin shiyodin ha-mishpatei ha-Torah, let's say you didn't have any dayin who knew how to decide according to mishpatei ha-Torah. This is the concept of Al-Kosha Besurya that the Rashba discusses. The Rashba in a tshuva discusses a community that doesn't have learned dayanim. So the Rashba says, if you don't have learned dayanim, so you can appoint judges to decide the case, but the judges can decide the case according to their own judgment, or they can consult with Batei Din in other areas when necessary. But if they can't consult, they can decide according to their own shikul hadas, according to their own judgment. They're not bound by secular law. They're just going to use their own judgment. If that's better than not having a Beis Din in place altogether. So the Chazon Ish says, yeah, if they're going to follow, number one, in Eretz Yisrael, you had plenty of learned people who could serve as Dayanim. He said, even if you didn't have people who could serve as Dayanim, they would only be allowed to follow their Shikul Hadas. They'd only be allowed to follow their own judgment, as opposed to being bound by secular law. They're not allowed to accept upon themselves the laws of the nations or to carve out their own statutes. If a judge is just deciding according to what's right and just in his eyes, okay, that's what we call pshara, it's called compromise. That you're allowed to do. That's called shebesuya. They nikar adava shazim and call mayim chayim lachso boas nishbarim. Doesn't look like they've left the world of Torah in order to dig wells which are broken. But if they agree to accept a separate standalone legal system, then that is considered to be a desecration of Torah. That's worse than a condition. That's called a desecration of Torah. Doesn't matter whether they're going in front of a secular court, which is made up of non-Jews, or Ben Yisrael, or whether they're going in front of Jews, who are deciding the case according to legislation that they have framed that is counter to Torah laws. If anything, it makes the matters worse. Because they've exchanged the statutes of the Torah for statutes of the secular world, which are not divinely inspired. And even if everybody in the country, let's say that they had a referendum, and the majority of people voted that they wanted the secular statutes as opposed to the Torah statutes, it doesn't matter. This is not subject to a democratic vote. If they force people into this when they don't want, then it's considered to be gezel va'oshik. That's considered to be also an example of haramas yad keneged Toras Moshe Rabbeinu, as the Rambam writes. So the Chazon Ish wasn't the only one who felt this way. Rav Avadya Yosef in his Tshuvos also writes very, very strongly against this, and Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank at the time wrote very strongly against it, and Rav Yitzchak Isaac Halevi Herzog, who is the Ashkenazic chief rabbi, wrote very strongly against this. Come on. Everybody, all of the major poskim, the major rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael, felt that this was a disaster. This was not right. This does not have a proper basis in halacha. There was a Me'iri in Sanhedrin when the Me'iri discusses our kosher b'surya. So the Me'iri says, well, they're done in la'omid daitam of chukum v'nimusim, that they decide according to their judgment and orders, and also according to statutes and conventions. So some wanted to seize upon the word. This is what the Professor Eilon wanted to seize upon, the fact that the Me'iri said of the Chukim, that even these Arkos Shebesuya, they would decide according to statutes that were in front of them. They weren't Jewish statutes. So we see that they have that type of authority. So Rav Avram Sherman wrote a very sharp article against this argument in one of the issues of Tehumen, in which he pointed out that if you look at the Me'iri says very clearly they're not bound by the secular laws, that these are people who are deciding according to their own judgment. Sometimes they'll take a look and see, since they're not capable of reading the Shulchan Aruch, but they're capable of reading the colloquial legal statute books. So sometimes they'll take a look inside in order to get an idea of what they should do, but they're not bound by it. But if you have judges who are actually bound by such a thing, so that would be a violation. That's something which you're not allowed to do. So I had the following two cases that came in front of me in pretty close succession. It was interesting. Both shilas, sometimes you get a certain type of shilah, you get them like in patterns, you get like five shilas about the same thing in 1 week. Like this happened to me a couple of months ago. I got like within 1 week, I had five different shilas about transgender situations. It happened in 1 week, five different shilas. And then, okay, it's been quiet since then. So I got two shilas about these issues. Both are sort of back to back. So one was a case where there was a shul where the board members wanted to insert into the contract with the rabbi that if there's ever a dispute, then they will bring the dispute in front of a civil court for adjudication. That was the clause in which they placed into the contract, and the rabbi wanted to be able to finish his contract negotiations already. Contract negotiations for a rabbi are very often not such a fun process. So he wanted to be able to finish the contract, but he knew that this clause was very problematic and wanted to know what to do. And the second case was a case of a Jew who was entering into a business transaction with another Jewish company, another Jewish-owned company. But the other Jewish-owned company, they weren't observant, and they didn't understand from Betin, they didn't understand from rabbinical courts at all. But they wanted to insert a clause into their contract as well that said that if the two businesses ever had a dispute, that the dispute would be brought in front of a court of competent jurisdiction in the state where they lived. In other words, in front of a secular court, and that also is a clause that would be null and void according to halacha. So I answer the two questions differently. In the case of the rabbi in the shul, the board members of the shul really had a responsibility not to enter into a contractual clause which would be in violation of halacha. This is what Rav Moshe Feinstein writes in Choshen Mishpat, Chelek Choshen Mishpat, Chelek Aleph Siman Ayin Zayin. He talks about how the menahalim of a school, if they want to fire a teacher after a certain period of time, and they say, well, our practice, our custom is that we can just, that our teachers are employees at will, and therefore we can just fire them whenever we please. So Moshe writes, but that's not in accordance with Torah law. So they'll say, okay, but this is a davar shebemamon, that we're agreeing to ahead of time, and a davar shebemamon, we're saying that we're accepting upon ourselves a different practice from Torah law, that we're just going to be able to fire anybody whenever we please. So Moshe says that if you're a menahal, you're menahalim, you're directors of a Torah-based organization, you're hired for purposes of following Torah law. You're not hired for purposes of going against Torah law. So the directors of a Jewish organization have an obligation, or can be held to an obligation, to only have a Torah law standards in all of their contracts and all of their dealings. So therefore, they're not allowed to enter into that type of an understanding. That's what Rav Moshe writes. So based on that, I said that in the case of the rabbi in the shul, even though the rabbi wanted to finish the contract negotiation, it wouldn't be right for a rabbi to have in his contract that if there's a dispute, they're going to go in front of secular court, even if the rabbi didn't plan on honoring it. Just not right to have such a contract. So what if you have a board that simply doesn't recognize the institution of Beis Din, or doesn't trust any rabbinical court in its area to submit the dispute in front of any type of a rabbinical court? So then there's a separate inyan, which is discussed by Rabbi Akiva Eger in the beginning of Choshen Mishpat, I think Siman Gimel, also in the material. So Rabbi Akiva Eger was asked the question of, he quoted a Maharshach, was asked the question that let's say that you have people in a particular business industry, and in that business industry, when cases are disputed, they're not submitted in front of a Beis Din, but they're submitted in front of an arbitration board. An arbitration board is not a secular court. An arbitration board is like, let's say you have the diamond industry in Manhattan, and they have an arbitration board whenever there's a dispute between diamond dealers. So instead of going either to court or to Beis Din, there are people who are expert diamond dealers who know the industry, and they hear the case that's presented, and they decide according to principles of the industry, according to what we call the minhag ha'sochrim. So Reuven and Shimon have a dispute in a particular industry, and Reuven says, I want to go to Bezdin, and Shimon says, no, I want to go, everybody in this industry goes in front of the arbitration board, I want to go in front of the arbitration board. So who's right? So the Maharshach says Shimon is right, that you get, if the industry custom is to go in front of the arbitration board, that's okay. That's not considered to be a violation of the prohibition of going to secular courts, because you're not going to secular courts. Number one, this is an arbitration board. It's not under the secular court system. Like an analogous institution would be the American Arbitration Association. And number two, they're not bound to follow secular law. They just follow the standards and customs of the industry. So that would be considered to be okay. Rabbi Akiva Eiger quotes that favorably. Yes.
Even in arbitration, like the arbitration decision is binding in U.S. law.
The fact that decision is binding is not a problem, as long as it's not predicated upon the secular law. So that would be okay. You need to have shotrim to a decision. That's a separate thing. There's a shoftim, really. Everything we're discussing relates to the shoftim. That the shoftim, the judges, have to be of a certain caliber, have to be of a certain type. But as far as the shotrim can be anybody. The shotrim are just police officers. The secular courts can serve as the police officers for the Bezdin decisions. In fact, that's the way Bezdin decisions are enforceable nowadays. The Bezdin hands down its decision, and then the decision is enforced by the secular courts. That's considered to be perfectly okay. That's the Mishnah in Gittin. Towards the end of Gittin, Pechasim Beis, the Mishnah says that if Bezdin hands down a decision, for example, that a husband has to give his wife a get, and then the secular court says, "Asei mashi sol omim l'cha." The secular court enforces the Bezdin's decision. That's considered to be perfectly proper. That's not a problem at all. So Rabbi Akiva Eiger says, so this would be considered to be perfectly okay. To bring a case in front of arbitrators to follow the industry custom, that's considered to be perfectly okay. Yes?
Why would that be different in the small cases court where we're also following the law?
Very good question. The difference with the small claims court is that it's part of a court system. That you're going to the court itself. That the court has different bodies of judicial authorities and judicial hearings within the courthouse, and some are deciding the case according to the strict secular law, and some are deciding the case according to pshara, according to principles of compromise, but it's all part of the court system. So once you're appearing in front of the court system, you're being miyakish shem lilim, you're giving respect to a foreign court system. But if you're just going in front of arbitrators who are not officially empowered or impaneled by the court system, so that's a different story altogether. So they're discussed in different places in Shulchan Aruch. Pshara b'pnei Nachrim, doing a compromise in front of non-Jews, is discussed in Siman Chof Beis, and going and doing a pshara b'pnei Arkos is discussed in Siman Samaches. They're considered to be different categories.
Well, what is it like the distinction between being empowered?
Because they're not part of the system. They're not part of the system. That's the difference, that they're not part of the system. So Rabbi Akiva Eiger says that would be okay. So therefore I said, in this case, that if the board members can't agree upon choosing a Bezdin, at the very least, the contract should spell out that they'll agree to arbitration, because this is typical that many parties in major business transactions nowadays agree to arbitrate their disputes in front of, say, the American Arbitration Association or something like that. So strictly speaking, that's not an issur call. So if they can't agree upon Bezdin, I said at the very least there should be an insistence that the clause not be in violation of halacha, that the clause be that they'll agree that the dispute will be in front of arbitrators. So that was the answer that I gave to that question. Then the second question with respect to the businessmen. So in this case, it wasn't menalim of a Torah organization. The other business to the contract, the other Jewish owner to the contract, was not observant, didn't know from the world of Bezdin, couldn't be convinced that they should agree to Bezdin, and wouldn't necessarily agree so readily to arbitration either. So here, I thought that one could agree to have such a clause inserted as long as the party that was more observant and wanted to follow the halacha had no intention of necessarily going to civil court if the other party would agree to go to Beis Din. This is based on the Rosh, really, because the Rosh says that parties sometimes have such a contract, such a clause in their contract that says, well, they can go in front of Beis Din or they can go in front of the civil courts. So the Rosh interpreted it to mean that if the other party will agree to go, will not agree to go to Beis Din, so then the petitioner will have the right to bring the defendant to secular court. So the Yam Shel Shlomo says that to the extent that one has such a contract, that's the way that one should interpret a contract. Let's say that one enters into a contract, Reuven enters into a contract with Shimon. Shimon is not observant, and Shimon is only interested in going in front of the secular court. So Reuven can say, the truth is that I would really want to bring you to Beis Din. And if I have a dispute against you, I really want to come to Beis Din. Even though right now you're refusing, you Shimon are refusing to go to Beis Din, and you don't want to put such a clause in the contract, I'm not going to hold you to that. If I have a dispute with you and you change your mind and you're willing to go to Beis Din, so then of course I'll bring you to Beis Din. So what's the purpose of this? So what's the purpose of this clause? Shimon presumably wants to utilize this clause to bring Reuven to civil court. But the truth of the matter is, Shimon, who's not observant, would have the ability under secular law to bring Reuven to secular court even without this provision. The provision just is like belt and suspenders from a secular law perspective, but this provision is not what's giving Simon the ability to bring Reuven to secular court. So Yam Shel Shlomo says, you know what this provision says from Reuven's perspective? What this provision says is that if Reuven has a claim against Simon, and Reuven is pretty sure at the time that he brings the claim against Simon that Simon is still going to refuse to go to Beis Din. Simon has not become a Baal Teshuva in the interim, so then normally Reuven would have to go to Beis Din first in order to get permission from Beis Din to bring Simon to secular court, for Beis Din has to make the determination that Simon is really going to refuse to go to Beis Din before giving permission to go to secular court. So if there is such a provision in the contract that Simon insisted upon, so then, absent Reuven knowing otherwise, Reuven has the right to assume that Simon is going to refuse to go to secular court and wouldn't even have to ask permission of the Beis Din to bring Simon to secular court. Not that Reuven is violating or that Reuven is bypassing halacha in some sense, but if Reuven has the knowledge or has a reasonable basis to assume that Simon is going to refuse to go to Beis Din, so in such circumstances, then there's a heter, then there's permission to bring Simon into to secular court, and that's based on separate principles that we're going to discuss in just a couple of minutes. There are some cases where there's a heter, where there's permission to go to secular court when the defendant refuses to go to Beis Din. What about in a case where there's this sugya at the beginning of Maseches Sanhedrin that discusses Beis Din's jurisdiction? It says that there are many cases that require Beis Din mumchen, that require Beis Din that has authorization of smicha from Moshe Rabbeinu, and nowadays we don't have smicha from Moshe Rabbeinu. So on what basis do we hear cases nowadays? So the Gemara intimates, the Rishonim talk about it, flesh it out more from the Gemara, and the Gemara in Baba Kama and Daf Pei Dalet spells this out more explicitly. The Gemara at the end of Gittin spells this out explicitly, and it's based on the principle of Shlichu Sayu. Just like in the time of the Gemara, the Dayanim in Babel didn't have authority to decide all of the cases. They were in Bumchin, but they had the right to decide cases because they were considered to be agents of the Dayanim who were in Eretz Yisrael. So Tosu says, and nowadays all the Dayanim are considered to be agents of the Dayanim from previous times. Shlichusayu de Kamaika of Dinam. But the Gemara says that we only apply Shlichusayu to most of the Shlichav Yeshbach Yisrael Kis. The common types of cases like Yerusha disputes, Haldas veHalbos, cases of loans, things of that variety, but we don't apply Shlichusayu to matters which are either not Shliach, either are not common occurrences, or types of disputes, the Leisbach Yisaron Kis, like Knossos, penalties, things of that variety, where there is no Yisaron Kis, where there hasn't been a loss of money with respect to the relief that is being sought. So what if you have cases like that are not covered by Shlichusayu? So is there a heter or kos Does, let's say that Reuven has a claim against Shimon with respect to some sort of matter that's not covered by Shlichus Sayil. For example, there's a machlokus between the Shach and the Shvus Yaakov in the first siman of Shulchan Aruch Choshe Mishpat, whether Niske Eshu Bor is alchem that come from a fire and from pits, like a Bor Vishu Sarabim, whether those claims are subject to Shlichus Sayil or not. So the Shach says they're not subject to Shlichus Sayil. They're not considered to be sufficiently shchiach. They don't happen with enough regularity. They're not considered to be subject to shlichus sayu. So does that mean that if someone has such a claim that they have the right to bring it in civil court? So I had a case like that. That there was a plaintiff whose son was riding a bicycle in a bungalow colony and it fell into a puddle that wasn't properly repaired. So he brought a case against the owner of the bungalow colony in civil court. So the owner of the bungalow colony said, I want him to bring me to Bezdin. He has no right to bring me to civil court. This is a case, a monetary dispute between two Jews, so it should be adjudicated in Bezdin. So the plaintiff had a toy, had a rabbi who was hired to be a rabbinic advocate, and the rabbi wrote a whole long essay explaining why they thought that they had the right to bring the case to civil court. And one of his major arguments is, we're going to say Kimli. We're going to say that we're assuming that the Shach is correct. We have the right to assume like the Shach. The Niske, this is a Nezek of a boar, right? The boar, which is a big pothole, that was caused by a boar. And since, according to the Shach, Niske boar are not subject to Shlichus Sayil, therefore we have the right to go to secular court. So I pointed out that this is against the Baal HaTrumos, that the Beis Yosef in Simen Chavav quotes the Baal HaTrumos, and the Baal HaTrumos says explicitly that even if something is not subject to Shlichus Sayil, nonetheless there still is an obligation to bring the matter to Beis Din. This is the Beis Yosef, Simen Chavav, Sif, I don't know, little Sif Hey, in the Beis Yosef. The Kasev Od Baal HaTrumos, Afilu Dinei Chavalo, She'enem Asum Lanem Izman Hazeh. One person hits another person, Adam Ba'adam. Do we say, okay, that's not considered to be so Shliach? So that's not something which is subject to Shlichus Sayil. Also, Limso Bidei Goyim is still not allowed to bring it to civil courts. Even though we don't adjudicate these types of matters, Yesh Lo Dayanim, or Knossos matters, Yesh Lo Dayanim, I know, Shliknos Adam, the Dayanim nonetheless can impose penalties as they see fit in order to maintain law and order. Maybe they can't decide according to the strict letter of the law when it comes to matters that are not subject to Shlichus Sayil, but they can figure out ways around it. It's okay, you won't pay exactly this amount. You'll pay some other compensatory amount, or we'll put you in cheirim until you appease the other party. They'll figure out some other way that the money will get paid, but it's still subject to Beis Din jurisdiction. Not only that, but the Beis Din also has the authority. This is a tshuva. This is quoted by Rabbi Shanan, a dayan in Eretz Yisrael, who wrote a maimer in Tehumen about this subject. Sometimes the Beis Din has the right to assign the case to civil court. The Beis Din can say, the case in which this is the smack. The Rimei Kravil is the smack. So the case that the smack was talking about was where Reuven assaulted Shimon, and Reuven wanted to get out of paying boshes, wanted to get out of paying costs of shame and embarrassment, because that's not something which we collect nowadays. It's not included within most of the shchich of Yesh Bach Yisrael and Kis, so we don't collect it according to strict Beis Din jurisdiction. So the smack says that if the Beis Din feels that Reuven did such a terrible avla in attacking Shimon, that the amount really should be collected, and Beis Din doesn't have the means one way or another to impose the collection of this payment, so then Beis Din can decide on its own that it's going to assign the case to civil court. But that's a Beis Din determination. If Reuven runs straight to civil court, so that's a violation of being Meir Miyad B'Toas Moshe Rabbeinu Miyakir Shem Alilim, and that's something which would still be prohibited. So I pointed this out to the Toei, that just because something doesn't fall under the ambit of Shlichus Sayil, it doesn't mean that it shouldn't be brought to Beis Din. Beis Din will either say you don't have the right to collect, or we'll figure out some other way that you'll collect something, or we'll assign the case to civil court, but the first stop has to be Beis Din. Yes?
What was the Havamina that there should ever not be an Esrarkos just because you can't enforce something in Beis Din?
didn't think that there would be much of a habamina. I guess the habamina would have been that since it's outside of Bezdin's jurisdiction, so therefore it must be subject to a different jurisdiction. That once we define Bezdin jurisdiction, it means that the Issur HaKos would only apply to things which are within Bezdin jurisdiction. We say that with respect to certain things, like, for example, criminal matters. And nowadays, Bezdin doesn't have criminal jurisdiction. If we're not in charge of the government, we don't have criminal jurisdiction. Criminal jurisdiction, the Dvar Avraham talks about different means of jurisdiction that are subject to Dina de Malchus Adina. The first siman in the Dvar Avraham. So the Dvar Avraham says that one of the areas is in terms of criminal jurisdiction. The basis of the Bezdin to be Makin Melonshin Shalom and Adin is based on Bezdin being the authorities in charge. Even in certain European countries, Bezdin was given criminal jurisdiction as well. But in those countries, like in America, where Bezdin can't lock people up, Bezdin doesn't have the right to inflict physical damage or corporal punishment upon people. If a Bezdin would do something like that, all the people might end up going to jail. I think things like that have happened, actually. That Bezdin doesn't have that type of jurisdiction. So, therefore, that can only be dealt with by the criminal authorities. But the reason there is that, strictly speaking, the parties, once it's a criminal matter, the parties are not the two litigants. The parties are the government and the perpetrator. And the government, therefore, is not bound, if it's not a Jewish government, it's not bound to go to Bezdin. They can go to their own court system. So whenever there's a criminal charge, even if one Jewish party brought criminal charges against another Jewish party, the way in which the case is brought in court, in criminal court, is that it's the government that brings the case against the criminal offender, or the alleged criminal offender. So therefore, that's not considered to be a violation of our cause. But here, it still would be a violation of our cause, because the two parties to the suit are still Jewish parties. Yes? I'm sorry? Usher to use the Bezdin? No. It might be usher for the Bezdin to decide according to the strict din. So the Bezdin has to figure out how it's going to deal with the case, and not in accordance with the strict din. But one is supposed to go to Bezdin. Well, that's the whole idea, that we say that even though we're not mumchin bisman hazeh, nonetheless, so there still is some sort of a residual authority of Bezdin based on the principle of shlichus ayu. And even if Bezdin can't exercise its function completely, Bezdin can exercise its function in an inexact way. Or Bezdin's function becomes just to refer the case to the civil court system. But there still is some, let's say there wouldn't even be a shlichus ayu, but there still is an institution of Bezdin. The pashtus is that the obligation of establishing Bati Din, you look in the Rambam, the pashtus is that it applies b'chol hazmanim, whether there are mumchen, whether there aren't mumchen. We have to establish Bati Din, just like the Rashba spoke about establishing Arkos Shepesuya. You have to always have Bezdin entities that are available. And whatever authority that Bezdin has, whether subject to Shlichus Ayu or not subject to Shlichus Ayu, but that has to be the first stop. This is the official court of the Jewish community. So the parties are obligated to go in front of the official court of the Jewish community. So what about the situations? Does that answer your question? Okay, so what about the situations where we might permit somebody to go to secular court? When would we permit somebody potentially to go to secular court? So so first we have a principle that we have a Gemara in Baba Kama that says that, let's say the Gemara there has a number of different mamarim. Some of them are cryptic mamarim of different types of famous sayings that are found in various writings. And then the Gemara finds like a basis in halacha for all of the different sayings. So let me just pull up the Gemara. This is in Baba Kama on Daf Sadi Beis Amud Beis. The Gemara there says, Minaha Milsa, how do we know that Da'ami Yenshi Karis Chava Floanach, that if you call somebody and they don't answer you, Rami Guda Rabba Shadi Bay, that you should take a big wall and you should throw it at them? So they quote a pasuk. So what does it mean? You take a big wall and you throw it at them. What's going on over here? So the Rosh quotes from a Paltoigon, is saying that what's going on over here is Really this is a reference to Reuven summoned Shimon to come to Beis Din, and Shimon refused to come to Beis Din. Reuven sheish lo tvi al Shimon, misarev lovo imoledin, shirashay lavi al akal shonachim. That the Gemara is teaching you, under those circumstances, Reuven is allowed to bring Shimon to the akal shonachim, to bring Shimon to the non-Jewish courts. Kedei lahotzi yashalom itachas yadu, in order that he'll be able to collect what he feels is owing to him according to the din. So this is a source for heter al kos, that one is permitted to go, Reuven, the petitioner, is allowed to go to court if Shimon, the defendant, refuses to come to Beis Din. And the other source that's quoted by the Baal HaTrumos is based on the Gemara in Gittin that we quoted earlier, that you can rely upon the court system to say Asei Mashi Yisrael Omim Lecha, that sometimes you can have the court system intervene if a person is not complying with what the Beis Din is telling them to do. So that applies to the end of the judgment. That applies if Beis Din has issued a psak and one party is not complying, but it can apply at the beginning too. The one party is refusing to come to Beis Din. On what basis would this be justified? If there's a ritual prohibition against going to secular courts, how can we ever permit it to happen? So the Ksam Sofer says, no, you don't understand. We're allowing it to happen, Ayyadei Beis Din. We're allowing it to happen because the Beis Din is authorizing a party to go to the secular courts. So therefore, it's considered as if the secular court system in such a case is functioning as a long-arm agent of the Beis Din. So it's really the Beis Din which is adjudicating the case through the secular court system, because the Beis Din has authorized the case to be heard by the secular court, much like the case of the Smak. The Smak says something is beyond the Beis Din jurisdiction, so Beis Din can assign it to the secular court. So that's not considered to be an Issur Kos. That's what the Sam Sofer, Chosh Mishpat, Simon Gimel explains. Yes?
About the case when I said earlier, when you know the person's going to refuse,
so that's a question as to whether you have the right to go straight to the courts. So it could be that maybe normally you wouldn't have the right to go straight to the courts. The Yam Shel Shlomo seems to say when you have the contractual clause, you have the right to assume that the person won't be coming to Beis Din. So the Kesef HaKachim discusses this as well. The Kesef HaKachim seems to intimate that it's ki'ilu, that it's as if Beis Din is deemed to have given rishus, is deemed to have given permission, when it's very clear that one party is going to refuse to come to Beis Din. Nowadays, Rabbi Bleich writes, and others say this as well, you know, absent maybe a contractual clause, like the case that we discussed, where you don't really have the right to assume that even a non-observant Jew is not going to go to Beis Din. Because Rabbi Bleich says that since there's been such a proliferation of alternative dispute resolution forums, that now it's very much in vogue for parties to go to arbitrators or mediation or resolve their disputes outside of the court system, because the court system is very costly and very prolonged, and it's a very difficult and a painful process. So more and more people are opting out of the court system, and they're opting to bring their cases to different arbitration and alternative dispute resolution venues instead. So it could be that even a non-observant Jew would be interested in coming to Beis Din. They say that this is a question with respect to non-Jews. Maybe even if a Jew has a dispute with a non-Jew, the Jew should bring the non-Jew to Beis Din. There's a Tashbetz that has a girsa from a medrash, Tanhuma, or something that says that indicates that even the non-Jews are really obligated to go in front of rabbinical courts. If there's a Jew that has a dispute with a non-Jew, really that should be in front of the Jewish court system as well. So why then don't we always summon non-Jews to go in front of the Jewish courts? So here we assume that there's a much stronger umdana, that a non-Jew is not going to go and want to go in front of the Beis Din. Unless the non-Jew expresses very clearly that they want to go in front of the Beis Din, there's a very strong umdana that the non-Jew will not want to go in front of a Beis Din. We had a couple of cases that I dealt with over the years. I remember I had a landlord-tenant case once where there was a non-Jewish tenant and a Jewish landlord, and the non-Jewish tenant brought the Jewish landlord in front of a Beis Din. So the Jewish landlord wanted to know, am I obligated to go to Beis Din with a non-Jewish party? So we quoted the Tashbetz. According to the Tashbetz, you're absolutely required. So the Beis Din adjudicated the case. I had a case once where there was a large bank, one of the largest banks in the country, had a lawsuit against a member of the Fum community. It was a $110 million lawsuit or something like that, and they brought it to Beis Din. He said, why are you bringing the case to Beis Din? So they said that we're concerned that if we bring the case to civil court, we know that we can win $110 million in civil court, no problem. But we're afraid that the defendant will never pay a penny, that they'll be able to hide their assets and that we'll never collect anything. But if the Beis Din issues a judgment, so we know that this person will have respect for the Beis Din and they'll care about their standing in the community and they'll respect whatever the Beis Din says. So I met with the parties. So we met and we worked out something. We worked out a pshara. So sometimes you have non-Jewish parties that will come to the Beis Din. So it's appropriate then that the Jewish party should agree to hear the case with the non-Jewish party in Beis Din as well. But with a non-Jewish, but with a Jewish party, you don't necessarily have the same assumption, unless you hear otherwise, that the person will not agree to come to Beis Din, even though the defendant is not observing. Maybe they will agree to come to Beis Din. That happens very often. Yes.
In a case where Beis Din gives someone permission to go to a non-Jewish court. So if the non-Jewish court then grants extremely more than what Beis Din whatever gives, are you still bound by the halacha?
That's a question. The Nesivos HaMishpat seems to indicate that the Beis Din should only get permission to go to civil court when the Beis Din has determined that the plaintiff has a real case in which they have a right to collect in Beis Din, and otherwise if they wouldn't have the right to collect according to Jewish law, it would be Gezel. Rabbi Kiva Eger writes that as well, that it would be considered to be Gezel. Rabbi Black seems to assume that way as well. But the Aruch HaShulchan already tempers this a little bit. The Aruch HaShulchan says, well, if the defendant isn't there in front of the Beis Din, how is the Beis Din going to figure out if it's a valid claim or not? So if the Beis Din has a reasonable basis to assume that the claim could have validity, so then the Beis Din can authorize the petitioner to bring the case to civil court, even if it's not 100% clear, because why should the petitioner be penalized because the defendant isn't around to enable the Beis Din to determine whether or not it's 100% clear. So Chaim Cohen is a dying. So the boy was dying. So Chaim Cohen wrote an article. There was a journal that was around for a while. It was called Divrei Mishpat. It had a lot of very good articles. You could find it in the fifth floor Beis Din room. A lot of very good articles about Beis Din practice. So Chaim Cohen wrote an article in which he said the practice is not like the Nesivos. The practice is that Beis Din authorizes a party to go to civil court, and even if but Beis Din has not determined that the petitioner's claim is definitely going to be a winning claim in Beis Din, and even if there's a possibility that the civil court will award more than the Beis Din would have awarded, and the Beis Din will not require that any extra amount be reimbursed. So why is that? So he says, because there really are two independent sources for giving the heter. One is the source in Bava Kamma, which indicates that the Beis Din is involved. Karis v'lo anach, that the Beis Din summoned a defendant, defendant refused to appear, so the Beis Din granted authority to go in front of civil court. And one is the Sefer HaTrumos, that indicates that it's kind of like a knas. A person didn't comply with a process, and and the secular court system comes into play and says you got to do what you're obligated to do. So according to that source, he says maybe this is what we assume, that we assume that it's not just working on the basis of a shus Beis Din that we give a heter hakos when a defendant refuses to appear before Beis Din, but it's working on the basis of knas. It's working on the basis that we're going to penalize a party. We're going to be choftenos, so we're going to penalize a party. So if we're going to penalize a party, so then he says that the penalizing of a party is something which could include claims that would not otherwise be actionable according to Beis Din jurisdiction. Maybe it's the other way around. Maybe he's saying based on the Gemara in Bava Kamma, we see that it's a penalty. We see that there it's a you yourself ukaris chavach v'lo anach. We see that it's a penalty. Yeah. So he says that we see that it could be a penalty that one of the basis for the jurisdiction of a civil court in these cases is a knas. So the knas can extend even to a claim that would not otherwise have been actionable in front of Beis Din. So that's his explanation as to why that seems to be the minhag olam. That seems to be the minhag olam. So then there's a separate question about can you go to the civil courts in order to enforce the psak of the Beis Din. So in order to enforce the psak of the Beis Din, pretty much most of the authorities agree that this case clearly falls within the other Gemara of Asei Mashi Salomim Lecha, right? That once Beis Din has issued a psak, so of course it's appropriate to go in front of the civil courts at that point in order to strengthen the hands of Beis Din, in order to strengthen the jurisdiction of Beis Din by enforcing the Beis Din decision. So the Maharshach writes this way, Rav Shlomo Kluger writes this way, the Maharsham writes this way, and this seems to be the consensus of all postgame. This is a Rav Shrier Gaon that sounds this way as well. So because of the fact that this really appears to have a very, very strong basis, so therefore this is generally the accepted halacha, unless the Beis Din itself, when it issues the decision, says there are some matters that require some fine-tuning and don't go to enforce the psak in the civil court until we've done the fine-tuning. So then if the Beis Din is very explicitly not given reshus, so then there wouldn't necessarily be permission to enforce the psak in Beis Din. But if the Beis Din does not say otherwise, the implication is the one always has the implied reshus, if not the explicit reshus of the Beis Din to enforce the psak, to enforce the decision in Beis Din. In fact, in the rules and procedures of the Beis Din of America, we have this as well, in the rules and procedures of the Chicago Rabbinical Council as well, that the parties have an automatic built-in right to go to the civil court system in order to enforce the psak of the Beis Din in the event that one party refuses to comply with the decision that was handed down by the Beis Din. Okay? Any questions up to now about what I just said? Okay, good. Now, there's a separate question about what if permission was granted to a party to go to Beis Din. Let's say Reuven brought Shimon to Beis Din, and Shimon refused to go to Beis Din, so Beis Din granted permission to Reuven to go to the civil courts. But Reuven kind of dragged out the process and was twiddling his thumbs for a long time and never got around to bring the case to civil court. And now, a year and a half later, Shimon says, I changed my mind. I know that I wasn't compliant originally in terms of agreeing to go to Beis Din, but now I'm agreeing to go to Beis Din. So does Beis Din withdraw its heter al kos at that point in time? I'll give you a little bit of a context for this. That sometimes we say that if a person went to civil court, so then they don't have the right to insist that the case be brought to Beis Din afterwards. Let's say the plaintiff went to civil court and lost the case in civil court. So can the plaintiff rebring the case in Beis Din? So the Ramah quotes two different deos. The Ramah says that the ikar is that we don't allow two bites at the apple. If Reuven brought the case in civil court and lost, then we don't allow Reuven to bring the case back to Beis Din. Let's say Reuven brought Shimon to civil court, and Shimon went along with the process. So the Maharsham says that if even Shimon was the defendant, Shimon had a right to have the case adjudicated in the civil court, but Shimon already participated in the proceedings, and now after the case has already been decided, Shimon says, well, I wasn't the one who agreed to go to Beis Din, I don't like the outcome of the case, and now I want the case relitigated in Beis Din. So Maharsham says, even then, we wouldn't allow the case to be brought by the defendant to Beis Din, because the defendant went along with the process. Not only that, but the Maharsham, the way the Maharsham is understood by the Shayarim and Tziyonim Halacha, is that even if the case wasn't completely finished yet, but the defendant had substantially participated in court proceedings at the expense of both parties, that Shimon would not have the right to insist that the case be brought back to Beis Din. Obviously, if both parties agreed to bring it back to Beis Din, then they could. So what about in this particular case? Reuven wanted to bring the case to civil court. Nobody actually went to civil court. Shimon originally refused to go to Beis Din, but didn't go to civil court, and Reuven was now given permission to bring the case to civil court, dragged his feet for a long time. Do we say that if Shimon does tshuva, so now we're going to say the heter al kos is withdrawn and Reuven is obligated to bring the case to Beis Din? So what do you think? Anybody have any thoughts on this question? Yes.
I wouldn't see why you can't go back.
So I think you're 100% right. We had a case like this that we had to deal with, and we came to the conclusion that since nobody had gone to civil court, it was just that Shimon had originally not agreed to go to Beis Din, but the case was never actually brought in civil court, so we can't say that Shimon was protesting too late. Reuven has already expended expense by bringing the case to civil court, and now it wouldn't be right to insist that Reuven take the case out of civil court and bring it back to Beis Din after we had given him a heter. At this point, Reuven had not begun initiated proceedings in civil court yet, so we felt in this case that the heter kol should be removed, that since he didn't take advantage of the heter kol, and Baruch Hashem, we got the result that we wanted, that this is what we want, that both parties should agree to go to Beis Din, and there was no harm done. So therefore, we felt that the Shehet or Kos should be rescinded, and Shimon had an obligation to go to go to civil court. Okay, now what about if there is a clear-cut obligation, what we call a chob baror? Let's say that there is a promissory note that says Shimon owes money to Reuven, and Shimon doesn't deny that Shimon owes the money. It's just that Shimon is dragging his feet for years and years in terms of paying the obligation. He's waiting until the end of the Shemitah year, hoping the obligation will go away. Can Reuven go straight to civil court if it's just a question of enforcing the obligation? Nothing is actually going to be litigated. So the Maharsham quotes of Avraham Buchach, which is the Kesef HaKotchev, the same person, says that he thinks that it's in case of a chob baror, there isn't really an issur kos. There's no mishpatim. We say ve'elam mishpatim asher tasim lifneihem. There's nothing really being litigated. It's just a collection action. Beis Din doesn't have the ability to collect money anyway. Beis Din still needs shotrim. Main shotrim, ain shoftim, as the Tanhuma says in Parshas Shoftim. So all that's happening, even if Beis Din would issue a decision, at the end the Reuven would have to go to civil court in order to collect the judgment if Shimon refused to pay. So in this case, he thought that miyikar din, one doesn't even need the reshus of the Beis Din in order just to go to civil court for a collection action. It says it's a midas chasidus. One should go to Beis Din in order to get permission from the Beis Din to go straight to civil court, because Beis Din might determine that what appears to be a chob baror to Reuven isn't really a chob baror to Shimon. We have this a lot. Reuven thinks it's a chob baror, that Shimon owes the money. Shimon has 100 defenses, so therefore it's always appropriate to go to Beis Din in the first instance. But if there really was something that could be construed as a chob baror, and the petitioner didn't go straight to Beis Din, it's difficult to issue a seyrub against him. This comes up a lot with schools nowadays with respect to tuition collection. Sometimes there is a family that didn't make tuition payments, and the school wants to go straight to a collection agency. The collection agency has their protocols. Part of their protocols is that after a certain amount of hounding and harassing the party that hasn't paid, they start sending threatening letters that they're going to bring the party to court, and eventually they bring the party to court. So is this something which is permissible? So when schools have asked us this question, we've said, strictly speaking, you should have the collection agency first turn to Beis Din. Really, Beis Din has to determine whether it really is a chob baror. Maybe there is some sort of a defense. But if they didn't go to Beis Din and the school went straight to through the collection agency to the secular courts in order to collect the money, if it turns out, based on an examination of the information, it really is a chob baror. It's a very clear-cut tuition obligation. It's just a question of collection. It's not really a question of adjudication. So it would be very hard for a Beis Din to issue a seyruv, to issue a contempt order against a party that is just enforcing a collection action in such a case. What about an equal? What about bringing an injunction against the party? Let's say that Reuven wants to sue Shimon in Beis Din, but Reuven's not sure that Shimon's going to submit to Beis Din. Maybe Shimon's never going to come to Beis Din, and Reuven's worried that in the meantime, Shimon is going to dive to all of his assets and take them out of the country, or take out all of his empty all of his bank accounts. So can he issue an injunction saying, I just want from emptying all of the accounts? Maybe it's a business where there's a dispute and he doesn't want Shimon to empty all of the accounts of the business, wants to bring an injunction. Beis Din doesn't have authority. If the parties haven't signed an arbitration agreement, you know, for parties to really submit properly to Beis Din, it's not considered to be a submission to Beis Din unless they sign an arbitration agreement. So Beis Din has the authority to issue an enforceable decision that can be enforced by the shotrim, by the secular courts. So let's say Beis Din doesn't have an arbitration agreement, but Reuven's worried that Shimon's going to take all the money out of the country. So is Reuven allowed to bring an action to file for a temporary, what's called a TRO, a temporary restraining order, that would restrain Shimon from taking away all of the assets that are subject to the dispute? So Rav Moshe Feinstein in the Tshuva seems to indicate that would not be a violation of our kos. However, there's a condition that the poskim say that when moving brings a temporary restraining order, an injunction, moving has to make it very clear in his filing papers that as far as the substantive merits of the litigation, the substantive merits of the litigation are going to only be dealt with by Beis Din and not by civil court, that they do not intend for the civil court to judge on the merits of the case, but just to take this extraordinary preliminary action of freezing the assets until such time as the case can be properly adjudicated. The Shevet Halevi of Shmuel Bozen Zatzal wrote a tshuva indicating that he thought that one should go to a Beis Din first, even before freezing any assets, but it could be that it's not really a machlokis, that maybe Rav Bozner was talking about a case where it was an Eretz Yisrael, where the Beis Din anyway had jurisdiction in the case. If Beis Din anyway has jurisdiction, the parties already signed the Shtar Beruin, they already agree that they're going to go in front of the Beis Din. It's not a question that they're going to go in front of the Beis Din. So then it's appropriate to let the Beis Din make the decisions of when there should be injunctive relief and when there shouldn't be injunctive relief. But if the Beis Din doesn't have jurisdiction, well, it's difficult for Beis Din to exercise that authority. There's some Batei Din that if you call them up, they'll issue an ikkul even before they have jurisdiction over the case. That's very dangerous, because if a Beis Din doesn't have jurisdiction over the case, so then the party against whom the ikkul has been issued will feel that the Beis Din has it in for them. They'll feel that, yeah, the Beis Din doesn't even have, I never gave the Beis Din jurisdiction, and they're already deciding against me, authorizing a party to freeze their assets. So what the Beis Din of America does is that instead of authorizing any particular party over whom it does not have jurisdiction to exercise injunctive relief, it just published it. It published an article. It's a nice article, written by Rabbi Feit from our yeshiva in one of the Beis Din journals, in which he goes through different categories of what people are allowed to do. And he says, in these types of cases, it's okay to file for injunctive relief. This way the Beis Din isn't posturing in any particular case. Beis Din can just say, read our article. Everybody has access to the articles that are on the website. That's a better approach, I think, than... I remember there was one case where I was involved when I first came into the Beis Din world, where the Beis Din issued an injunctive relief against somebody, against a school, from evicting a teacher or principal from its premises because it wanted to fire somebody, and the Beis Din said, no, you can't evict the person from your premises until the case is brought to Beis Din, and the other side felt that the Beis Din had prejudged it. We didn't have jurisdiction over the case. There was no Shtar Beruin, and we had they felt that the Beis Din had pre... So after that occurred, I put down a rule in the Beis Din that we shouldn't issue injunctive relief against anyone. Even if it's mutter, it's not something that the Beis Din should paskin upon if it doesn't have jurisdiction, because it doesn't send the right impression. If it's mutter, it's mutter. So just have a memo on file that anybody can look up on the Beis Din website that it's okay to file for injunctive relief. So you're not intervening prematurely in any particular case. Now, there are cases that are not necessarily contested matters. Let's say a person wants to file for bankruptcy. A person wants to file for bankruptcy, so is that considered to be a violation of our cause? So there's no litigation. The person is just saying in front of the court that I want the court to be able to grant bankruptcy relief. There's no action that's taken against anybody in particular. The only way, assuming that it's mutter to file for bankruptcy relief, according to Dinan de Malchus de Dinan, the only way to file for bankruptcy relief is going to the courts. There's no actual litigation that's brought against anybody, so it's generally assumed that would be mutter. That would be permissible. What about for the people who have claims against the bankrupt individual? Are they allowed to bring claims in civil court? Let's say that they're Jewish creditors and the bankruptcy debtor is a Jewish individual. So one is not allowed to file any claims in Batei Din. It was just a case like this where a Beis Din got involved in a case where the debtor had filed for bankruptcy relief, and then the Beis Din issued a summons on behalf of some of the creditors. So that's a violation of secular law. It's a violation of Dina de Malchus. There's something called an automatic stay. It was a violation of the automatic stay. So the court had very unkind words for the Beis Din. So the Beis Din, technically speaking, has violated the automatic stay. So the Jewish creditors who went after the debtor, they were going to be penalized with actual monetary damages. The Beis Din, because it's such an esteemed religious body, so the bankruptcy court did not want to penalize the Beis Din, but just said that whatever the Beis Din did was null and void and had no effect, and was not very pleased with the Beis Din's actions. But the court said the Beis Din doesn't have authority So can the creditors then file for relief in secular court? So that also should be permissible, because they're not bringing action, they're just filing their claim. The way it works in bankruptcy court is that the bankruptcy creditors just file a notice of claim that they want to get online to receive relief to the extent that the debtor's assets are ever going to be distributed, and to get online. So that should be permissible. Like the Ksam Sofer writes in the same Simon Gimel, Choshe Mishpa, we discussed earlier, that if a person goes to civil court, not to adjudicate a case, but just to register a claim or register some testimony for future reference, so it will be on permanent record, that's not considered to be a violation of our code. So Moshe has a tshuva like that too. If somebody goes to probate court in order to collect from somebody's will, that's not considered to be a violation of our cause. If there is a case in which a defendant is covered by insurance, Rabbi Bleich has a chiddush that the insurance company, if they're not Jewish, so they're the real party in interest, and then the plaintiff would be allowed to go after the insurance company in civil court, and based on the assumption that the non-Jewish insurance company wouldn't agree to submit to Beis Din. So it's important to be familiar with all of these halachos, and to be very careful not to allow parties to go to secular court when a Beis Din is capable of handling a case, and not to prematurely go to civil court when it's really up to the Beis Din to decide to issue a heter or kol as to whether there is a basis for allowing a case to be adjudicated in civil court in a particular case. Otherwise, for sure, if a party goes to civil court when they were supposed to go to Beis Din first, so then without proper permission from the Beis Din, when it's not in the form of a knas, that they're going to civil court, then for sure it's a problem of gezel. We know from this week's parsha that the Dora Mabel lo nechtam dinam ela mishuma gezel, that the judgment of the Dora Mabel was only sealed based on their commission of theft. So we have to make sure that we stop the commission of theft, and that we do everything in our power in order to be mekayim. Shiva shavtenu kevarishona v'yotzenu kevatchila. Okay.
I will not let him in from here because I think